Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Turning Towards Life with me, Lizzie, and this lovely Justin. We are here again live, a little bit later than our timed broadcast because I completely overslept this morning. I'm on holiday and none of us, my family's normally entirely committed and remembering of Turning Towards Life. And this time, last night, I said, you have to remind me, you have to wake me up, definitely wake me up. And everyone said, yes, 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 yes. And then everybody overslept. So anyway, we're slightly later and I'm slightly disheveled. And Justin, if you remember in the early days, we had this saying, by hook or by crook, we would do this. And then the pandemic happened and it wasn't really necessary to do by hook or by crook because we were always in our houses. And now the world's opened up again and we are in our various different locations. And this is my first feeling of the by hook or by crookness, reminding me of maybe if you've been listening for a while, you remember the episode where we were doing a sailing week to facilitate people who were unable to see as well as we could through their eyes to do sailing. We were in Devon and I had to find a really smelly step of the back of a pub with, it was raining and I had my huge big sailing waterproof on, and Justin, we still did Turning Towards Life from there. So anyway, that was an extreme that gives me hope for this one, that this is not extreme at all and it's going to be fine. But I'm reminded of the by hook or by crookness of this commitment and this practice. I'm really grateful to be doing this as well, Justin, because we are right by the ocean. I can see this huge big vast sea in front of me, and finding this kind of depth of conversation in the presence of the magnitude of the beauty of the natural world for me is such a blessing. So I'm really grateful to be here, grateful for your source, and grateful for everyone being in the conversation with us, and grateful that we can do it by hook or by crook and it doesn't have to be perfect. And we've never made that rule for ourselves that we have to have production or lighting or something. And so it means that we can do it and we can be genuine and keep turning up no matter where we are. So I'm really grateful.
Thank you for all of that, Lizzie. It's very fabulous to be able to do this with you on an island in the middle of the ocean and me at home. And I'm feeling very grateful for the technology. And also just what you said, it's quite a thing to be committing to a practice without having standards that would stop us from doing it.
Yeah.
So I suppose the thing I'm reflecting on at the moment, that it would be possible to do a podcast and say, well, it can only go out if it's shiny and complete, and if we made no mistakes and never forgot, and the technology always worked perfectly and everything. But the principle here is the other way around, which is continuing anyway, which is also what allows this to be the kind of conversation that it is, which is that we're not, you know, we don't go back and edit if we lose our way or we make a mistake or we say something that we wish we hadn't said or something like that. This is a really proper, genuine conversation, not polished for anyone, but what I always hope is kept very, very real by virtue of the way we're doing it. So it's a pleasure, it's a gift to be doing it this way. And I've had my own moments of sitting on doorsteps and under trees and running around trying to find Wi-Fi and 4G and all of that.
I remember a glamorous car park in Cornwall somewhere.
Yeah, cool. That's right. Right. Car in parks, car. Driving around, trying to in a car. We've done all of those things. So some weeks we are very, very like high class. And other weeks we are sort of string and sticky tape. And that's fine. And the technology that lets us do this is quite amazing. So
it is.
So thank you also to everyone who's still with us in our unshininess and our unpolishedness and our uneditedness. Maybe that's why you keep coming and joining us on Facebook or listening on the podcast or on our website or getting the emails that we send out that you can find, you can sign up for at turningtowards.life. Thank you to everyone. And I just want to say a little thank you. Somebody left us a very warm review in the last couple of weeks on the Apple podcasts thing, which was wonderful to read and also so helpful with people finding their way to us. So if you want to leave us reviews in places where you can, that's really welcome. If you want to sign up for our weekly email, that's at turningtowards.life. If you want to join us in our Facebook group, just search for Turning Towards Life, all of that. And now, after all of that preamble, we can turn towards our source for this week. So as always, we've got a source to launch us, as you know, Lizzie, into conversation. And it felt right this week to return to our very dear friend, Rosemary Wotola Trommer's work. Rosemary, thank you for writing every day, for sharing with us, and for being so generous in us bringing your work into our work and having it be a source for us. And it seemed to me, Lizzie, that now and again we come back to Rosemary and her writing, and it's her joy to do so. And I chose this source this week because I needed it. So you can find the sources in the Facebook group and on our website and in the notes for the podcasts, and I'll read it first. It's called Above the Paradox Valley. You do not need to know what comes next. There is always another storm, and you cannot hang the tent out to dry before it has gotten wet. You cannot shovel snow that has yet to fall. Put down the shovel, breathe into the dark spaces of your back. Feel how they open like cave doors to let in the light. Let your face soften. Let the creases fall out of your brow. The mind, no matter how clear, will never become a crystal ball. The wisest part of your body knows to run when it hears the first crashes of rockfall. It does not then pause to consider metamorphic or igneous, nor does it hesitate to wonder what might have pushed them down. It is no small thing to trust yourself. It's okay to cry. It is right that love should shake your body, that you should find yourself trembling in the rubble and dust after all your certainties come down. Your breath has not left you. Here is the morning rain. It opens the scent of the leaves of the air. All around you, the world is changing. What are you waiting for? Here is the cup of mint tea growing stronger in itself. Here on this cliff of uncertainty, there is a stillness in you so spirited, so alive. The wisest part of your body is dancing.
Thank you, Justin. Above the Paradox Valley. You do not need to know what comes next. There is always another storm, and you cannot hang the tent out to dry before it has gotten wet. You cannot shovel snow that is yet to fall. Put down the shovel, breathe into the dark spaces of your back. Feel how they open like cave doors to let in the light. Let your face soften. Let the creases fall out of your brow. The mind, no matter how clear, will never become a crystal ball. The wisest part of your body knows to run when it hears the first crashes of rockfall. It does not pause then to consider metamorphic or igneous, nor does it hesitate to wonder what might have pushed them down. It is no small thing to trust yourself. It's okay to cry. It's right that love should shake your body. You should find yourself trembling in the rubble and dust after all your certainties come down. Your breath has not left you. Here is the morning rain. It opens the scent of leaves of the air. All around you, the world is changing. What are you waiting for? Here is the cup of mint tea growing stronger in itself. Here on this cliff of uncertainty, there is a stillness in you, so spirited, so alive. The wisest part of your body is dancing.
Thank you, Lizzie. You know, I've loved this poem for a long time. And it's so funny reading it with you, because I was sure we've done this before. We haven't. And yet it feels like... Anyway, I think I wanted to bring this, Lizzie, because I can feel in me so strongly the rise and fall of, and I'm sure this is true for many of us, of times. There are times when I find myself knowing deeply this stillness inside myself that is so spirited, so alive. But there are also so many times when I'm caught in imagining I need to know what's coming next, and trying to hang the tent out to dry before it's got wet. And the kind of desperation that comes with that. And I've been noticing over the last few days the different scales that this shows up in. Right. So right now, the uncertainty of the world, both short term and long term, keeps on getting brought to. If you read the news or listen to the news ever, that's the dominant narrative of our time, it seems to me, is everything's falling apart, everything's on fire. Look, here's the next shock and the next shock and the next shock. And that's the story that's being, we've talked about this, that's the story that's being told in the wider media. And of course, it's got lots of truth to it. But also what I notice happens in me is it being in that story alone stokes the sense of sort of alarm in me. And then I had to replace, we had in our kitchen when we moved into our house 25 years ago, we put in lights underneath the cupboards, you know, and they were the lights available at the time. They're fluorescent tubes, and they keep on stopping working. So I thought, enough of this. There must be better technology now. And I've been trying to put in these little LED strips underneath that use a lot less energy and are a lot brighter, and you don't need to keep on dealing with these. And I can't get it to work because I can't figure out how to get enough power to the right places. And anyway, it's this sort of like very trivial thing. And yet I can feel the part of my body that is in alarm because I can't figure it out. And has sort of, there's a part of me that takes the, I can't get the lighting in the kitchen to work out the way I want it, and is so caught up in, if I don't sort this out, something terrible is going to happen. Or maybe a better way of saying it is, it's my job to be the one who takes care of it and who makes sure that nobody else is troubled by it. And I can't do it. And I can feel that part of me getting alarmed. And it's really interesting because it's not on the scale of a war that's unfolding in Europe, or an energy crisis, or you know, all the things that there are around. It's kitchen worktop lights. But there is still a part of me that is treating it like it's a calamity. So I love this line: your breath has not left you. Oh, I can't find it now. There's a part in this poem. Well, there's a part in this poem, Lizzie, that I can't find. I'm looking for. Oh, let me see, early on. Here it is. Put down the shovel.
Yeah.
Breathe into the dark spaces of your back. Feel how they open like cave doors to let in the light. Let your face soften. Let the creases fall out of your brow. And then I'm sort of going to put in a word here. Rosemary didn't write this, but remember that the wisest part of your body knows what to do when it hears the first crashes of rock fall. It's no small thing to trust yourself. With the rewiring of the kitchen lights, I can feel how much I need to be reminded of that. I need to be reminded so that the part of me that is very small and very frightened and feels like the whole world is going to crash down because I can't do the thing that I apparently take myself as being the one who's meant to do. That there's so much safety in my body if I'm willing to let myself find it. And I think that's where I was trying to find my way to say about why this feels so important.
Well, as you say, the story of the kitchen lights, and then in the same sentence, talk about the energy crisis and the unfolding wars and everything. The thing that happens for me is this remembering of like relativity. You know, I think it's so easy for us to say, oh my gosh, I'm such a fool for freaking out about the kitchen lights when look what's going on in the world. Or how can I make a fuss about this when look how privileged I am? Or how can I be focused on something so small when the world is so messed up? And again, like so many times in these conversations, it's finding it hard. It's not like I have this formed or something, but I can feel this, that those things aren't separate from each other. That whatever's happening with us, you know, this line that Rosemary says, it's okay to cry and to be in the rubble and to find yourself trembling after your certainties come down. Like our certainties can be kitchen lights and our certainties can be the world and everything in between. And it seems to me so important to acknowledge ourselves for whatever's happening. Because I don't think that's separate to how the world is probably going to shift itself into more health. So if we can remember our breath and the, what did she say about our backs, the dark spaces of our backs and how they open like cave doors to let in the light, I can feel the link between all of it through us as human beings. And when you talk about your kitchen lights, I'm no less interested from a human to human relationship way. I'm no less interested in your struggle with your kitchen lights than I am interested with your struggle with the world. And of course, there's an order of issue, like something is of magnitude and something is not in kind of practical terms. But I notice inside of the relationship with you, I have so many questions about your struggle with the kitchen lights, just as I have questions about your relationship to the news. And I really feel strongly about the relativity of things. Like it doesn't help to say I'm really, really sad, but there are people who are starving, so I can't deal with my sadness. I don't think that's the right way to be human, because I don't think that sadness is just going to disappear because you tell it to, because there's a bigger thing happening than your thing. Like that's not, it's never ever happened to me that I've gone, oh, there's something more dramatic than my story, and then my story changes. Okay, I have to go in, I have to find what's here, I have to find this trust in my body, like Rosemary's inviting us into, whether it's the kitchen lights or a natural disaster or someone dying. And honestly, this morning, Justin, we just found out that a family friend suddenly passed away from a heart attack yesterday morning. And their family obviously is in complete disarray. It's one of my mum's oldest friends and her family. And as you were reading this to me this morning, I felt like I needed to read this to the daughter of the person who died, who's shaking and crying and shocked and can't sleep and doesn't know what to do with herself. And that's a huge thing to happen. And one of the biggest things in the human life. And this also applies to my anticipation of something, or so it feels relevant, whatever the order of something that's happening to us. And I want to be a person in the world who doesn't put things in too much of an order that somebody in front of me isn't allowed to say the most mundane of struggles just because this bigger thing's happening. Because I just don't think that that's going to solve anything or help anything or soothe anything or welcome anything. It just kind of pushes things to the side when actually there is also a chance that by looking at ourselves in the struggle with the kitchen lights, we might find more strength, more resourcedness, more of our essential selves available. And that might be what the world needs on a bigger scale.
I'm really appreciating this way of talking about it, Lizzie, that about what happens when we honor the actual experience that we're having rather than dismissing it, like you were saying, like I shouldn't be feeling this about this because somebody else is feeling that about that somewhere else in the world. And that it doesn't help for us to marginalize our own experience or the experience of other people. Mm-hmm. You know, to say that is important or that isn't happening when we or other people say this is what's happening. Yeah. And also how it, what really struck me and you were saying is how it doesn't, how unhelpful it is to try and police our own or other people's experience. To go, I shouldn't be feeling this way. Or you shouldn't be feeling that way because of, you know, your privilege or my experience or the bigger thing that's happening in the world or the, because you are feeling the way you're feeling and experiencing what you're feeling. And I am feeling the way I'm feeling and experiencing what I'm experiencing. And then the question that this Rosemary's words open us into, it seems to me, it opens me into two different sort of parallel streams is, one is, can I also find that in with me, that of me, which I think is really what you called essential self, which is that of me, which is deeply trustable, and which when I breathe into the dark spaces of it, opens like cave doors to let in the light. And then also, can we find enough of that in ourselves, of ourselves, that we can then talk and listen to one another's actual experience rather than demanding that... me demanding that you in this moment where someone has died suddenly and shockingly, that's important to your family and obviously important to all the people around that person, that we don't act in a violent or unkind way by dismissing anything that happens in the midst of it, of it. And I was really taken by what you said. We've talked about this many, many times before about parts of us and our essential wholeness, our essential selves, and the sort of the relationship between the two is that if I go back to kitchen lights, that for me, and I can feel that there are other parts of me that do make exactly the move that you said, that go, I shouldn't be feeling this way. And how come I'm so worked up about it? And I should get it under control and get it under wraps. But that's an act of inner violence or oppression or, you know, marginalization, or you could talk about it in lots of different ways. And there's another move which goes, what is it to really honor that is true, that there's part of me that feels that way, that feels desperate? And then find that of me that can hold the part of me that feels desperate and have it met and seen, and maybe even offered the sense that there's some ground to stand on, that's not on its own. Mm. Can we do that for one another? Mm. Then we don't have to marginalize any part of us, but we also don't have to imagine that the parts of us that are desperate is all that there is about us and that they are somehow abandoned. There's something much, much and then we can be the ones who can cry and have love shake our body and find ourselves trembling and remember that our breath hasn't left us.
Yeah. And also what's occurring to me, Justin, is that there is this feeling in this poem of, you know, you can't shovel the snow before it's snowed. But also I feel like this conversation is kind of shoveling snow before it snowed in some way, in a really healthy, beautiful way, which is that when we talk like this, I feel at least a little more resource for when the snow comes and that I've got a shovel. You know, there's something about talking like this that it's inevitable, like Rosemary's saying, there will always be another something. And I'm feeling this feeling now of like, there will be a something. And you and I have talked about this lots of times, Justin. I can put this on again in the midst of when I'm in my horrible place, a difficult something. We have this space, we have this kind of conversation, these themes of welcoming one another and being able to be in the difficulty with this wisdom, with this way of encountering ourselves and others that makes the world not so frightening anymore. And that the uncertainty isn't so terrifying, because I know that in the uncertainty, things are going to happen and there will always be this, you know? And that feels really right to me, that we're building this space, we're building this welcome, so that when things are difficult, this is there. This is in amongst it. And it's reminding me, Justin, of, you know, all of the messages we've had over the years of people saying, oh, I'm in hospital, I'm having some kind of treatment and this really helps, or I've got long COVID and I can't get out of bed and I just put this on, or I can't sleep and I put this on. It's like, I feel like the field of turning towards life is the shovel in our hands, knowing it's going to snow, and we know we've got something that we could return to, which is a piece in Rosemary's poem, which is the breath. You know, we can return to our breath, we can return to that safer, more solid ground of our being. And it feels like this is a way that's, I don't know, like a route to cultivating that part in us, to be in the conversation, to listen to the conversation. You know, we're the speakers, but we're also the receivers and the listeners of it too. And then other people are the listeners, and that it's an oasis that we're making for ourselves in the face of when really, really hard things happen. And the hard thing can be the lights in the kitchen, or the hard thing could be someone dying, or an illness, or losing a job, or freaking out about how the dishwasher's loaded, which is talked about 100 times, but that we're welcoming a full spectrum of what it is to be human. And hopefully that gets fuller and fuller the more we talk and the more we move through all of our conversations and our sources, and it gets more and more nuanced and enriched and flavorful as we go through, so that there's more and more of a robust source of presence and support and welcome and acknowledgement of our humanness through this.
When you were saying everything you were just saying, Lizzie, about the what it is to hold the shovel together, or to know that the shovel is there, or to have a field between one another for all of these different things, to sort of in that we can trust, I suppose it's the difference between trying to shovel the snow before it falls, which is what the desperate parts of me want to do, and trusting the wisdom in us and in one another that knows what to do when the snow falls. Yes. Or when the rocks fall, and how we attend to it, not just in ourselves, but between one another. And in fact, I was also thinking about one of the things I would add to your list of things that we can be prepared for is the times that we're in disagreement or there's conflict between us, which is an inevitable and necessary part of being in any relationship or any community, is that there's going to be difference between us. And can we, what does it take to know the wisest parts of our own bodies that know what to do? And are there stillness that's inside each of us that's so spirited and so alive, and to know that in one another, so that when the world shakes from the outside, we can support one another, but when the world shakes from the inside and also in between us, we can continue to have the kind of faithfulness in what's possible. I think that's where I'm sort of landing, this sense of faithfulness in the wisdom that we can bring, even when some part of us is running around like crazy, desperate, that there's something in us that's wise enough to breathe and to let in the light and to dance and in the middle of things. Anyway, so that's where I'm sort of finding myself is reminded of what it is that finding it in ourselves also means finding it. It also leads to looking for it in the in-between us and in one another and what's the word? How we're called to do that.
Mm. Love it that you mentioned that, Justin, because I feel like in some ways what's one of the most, for me in my path, like one of the really terrifying things is the relationship part. Sometimes it feels impossible. So many times it just feels terrifying to fall out or to be in conflict or to not be okay inside of the difficulties that happen in relationship. And I feel so dedicated to being with people in all of that, probably partly because of how terrifying it is for me. You know, there's a part of me that feels really worried about everybody falling out, everybody not getting on, everybody fighting with each other, and probably quite rightly, it's the world is not a good place when everyone's fighting, as we know. And if we could bring this there and this is relevant there, I feel this huge big kind of hope arising in me. So I'm really grateful that you said that.
Well, thank you, Lizzie, as always, for being part of this conversation. It's time for us to close. So I'm feeling so very grateful we could do this, being in different parts of the world and make this work. And thank you, everybody who's with us, for being with us. And thank you, Rosemary, for your writing. We are deeply, deeply grateful for everything that you bring and the conversation that comes from this. And all being well, we will be back again next week.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.